Hey, everybody. Welcome to Monday. It's Monday, January. I'm normal. July. Starts with a J. July 26, 2021. Not January. I'm Larry Jacobs. Welcome to Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Where that came from, I have no idea. Okay, because it's a gorgeous day here in Maine, and I hope it's gorgeous where you are, too. Not too hot, not crazy weather, etc., etc. We have a show today with a fellow former Philadelphian like me. Dr. Meryl Schwartz is here from Pearson, and she does a lot of work with their virtual work, their asynchronous curriculum that they put together for online teachers' work, supporting students not only academic but also social-emotional learning. And she's also one of their super trainers. This is so interesting to me, for the integration of Pearson's race and ethnicity guidelines for content development, particularly in virtual education, hybrid education, diversity, equity, inclusion, social emotional learning, 21st century skills. We got to get this all together in the virtual world. It's been a tough year and a half. I work with my friends at Pearson. All right, Meryl's with us, so it's going to be a great show, which we'll archive over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. That is the home of our American Consortium for Equity in Education, which Education Talk Radio is the voice of. Okay, so go over to ace-ed.org. We'll archive the show there. All of our podcasts are there, as well as our magazine, which will have a new issue out this week, our online journal. It's excellent. I hope you take the time to read it. It's called Equity and Access Pre-K-12. Everything is at ace-ed.org. So go over and see all the cool stuff we're doing, right in line with what Meryl's doing. Good morning, Meryl. Larry here. How you doing today?
I'm doing great. Happy end of July, Larry. How are you?
Thank you very much. Are you all set for a fun August?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And grateful it's not January yet.
I know. I can't believe I said that. It was just ridiculous. Okay? And I'm not wishing for January. Let me make that point. Okay? So it's July, everybody. What can I say? And Meryl, you're down in Maryland, right? Am I right?
I am.
Yeah, which you'll notice they named that after your first name. It's Maryland.
That's it.
There you go.
Definitely.
That's good. That's good that you're there. Okay, like Pennsylvania for William Penn, Meryl Schwartz, Maryland. I like that. It's good enough. Okay. Yeah, tell it, and a fellow Philadelphian. Okay, though she's from the Northeast, I'm from West Philly. We these days we are one. Okay, so it's all cool. All right. Tell us, let's just start off with the whole idea of virtual K-12, and you threw a word in there, which I thought was really interesting. You didn't just say virtual education. You wrote asynchronous curriculum, asynchronous education, okay, and online. So just talk, just let's get into it that way, okay, defining virtual from your point of view.
Great. Okay, so for
you're
us
on.
Today, what I'm going to talk about, I'm on. Can you hear me?
You're on. Go for it.
All right. So for us today, we're going to look at virtual K-12 education as in there is no physical location that kids are going to. So it's all online. And while there is a lot of blended models out there, I'm really focusing on a model where the students are getting their coursework on their own time schedule asynchronously, which means they're off watching, reading, and then they'll have some synchronous learning time when they get together with maybe their teachers online live. But the content is delivered asynchronously, which is kind of like a flipped classroom model. And our Pearson Connection Academy schools are full schools that operate that way, and they've got all the bells and whistles, special ed, they've got counseling, but all that's happening online.
Right, and it's just amazing. And I have to ask you, is it – and I actually don't know this, okay? So you're going to help me, Dr. Schwartz. Kids go K-12, but that's a big range of development. There's a big difference, obviously, between a 12th grader and a first grader, okay? That's obvious. I know that much, okay? But when we talk about asynchronous, is it healthy – I'll just say it that way – for a – younger person who really doesn't understand any time management to be in an asynchronous forum? Or are there ages that they need synchronicity or whatever that word is to make it work? I'm just curious about that.
Well, it is structured so that these young students can't do this, obviously, on their own. So they have what we would call a learning coach. Their learning coach is likely their parent, but it might not be their parent.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've got somebody next to them that's helping them. They've got a schedule that sort of lays out their lessons for the day and their classes for the week. So there is structure. It's just, it's not, if it's 10 a.m. you're doing reading, if it's 10:30 you're doing, you know, math. So the younger they are, the more they get hands-on with a learning coach. And,
mm-hmm.
of course, the older they are, the more they're able to follow their own schedule and check, and they're getting, and they're checking in with their teacher. So that helps.
It does help, but I have to say, we must be, I'm actually talking about this in terms of Pearson, because Pearson's Connections Academy have been going for a long time. The world is learning in virtual education, synchronous, asynchronous, what works, what doesn't. And you guys have been doing this for a long period of time at Pearson, okay? And actually, I'll just ask that question quite simply. In virtual education, time-wise, what works, what doesn't best?
Well, time-wise, as in what a day looks like?
Yeah, for learning's sake, yeah. I'm just curious. You're an expert. I'm asking you.
Yeah, definitely. It looks like there's some structure. You know that a lesson is going to take about an hour. In that way, it doesn't look a whole lot different. What's different is that the student can put those pieces or those blocks of the day together in a sequence that they choose. And if they're younger and a mom and a dad or a learning coach knows that their kid needs to go out and like run wild in the yard between math and reading, they can do it. If a teenager knows they have to sleep in and they do better later in the day, awesome. They still have the same number of lessons, so to speak, although there's some flexibility. But I think that's one of the big advantages for those who choose to go to a virtual school is that there's some flex.
I always have to preface it this way. This pandemic absolutely stunk. It's terrible. 600,000 people died, all those families, people got sick, all that sort of thing. And we're not over it yet. But we learned some valuable things from it. Okay, so it's a bit of a silver lining behind the dark cloud as we learn how to do this and change the way we teach kids, change pedagogy. I only hope teacher education schools are listening, not necessarily to this, but are listening to the world of education, okay, and making changes in the way we train teachers for the future. It's really cool. And as you know, Merrill, and I know Pearson is too, you guys are so interested, as we are, okay, from our American Consortium for Equity in Education, again, over at ace-ed.org, okay, you guys are very interested, you folks, in integrating DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, as well as SEL, into all the work you're doing with 21st century skills into virtual K-12 education, and that is a lot on a plate. It's hard to do. And as I think I said this at the beginning, you're a super trainer there. I love this. For the integration of Pearson's race and ethnicity guidelines for a continental content development. Okay? So you are really an expert in this. How do you go about doing that? DEI, SEL, all the skill work plus the content. How do you do that, Merrill?
Yeah, it's work. It's challenging. I mean, I think the first bite that we took off with our new curriculum was to integrate the 21st century skills and the SEL lessons. And by integration, you know, I mean the kids are not having a separate, okay, now it's time to do SEL, now it's time to have a 21st century lesson. It's actually, you know, that every unit in the academic area is going to, It's built in,
yeah.
And then the 21st century skills in particular are also integrated into the way the lesson, the content, the academic piece is presented. So you have to do it up front. You have to plan for it up front. the DEI piece, we are knee-deep in figuring out the best way to do that. We know how the content should look and how it shouldn't look. And looking at how we can align the themes around diversity, equity, and inclusion so that they align with the state standards. And that's where it really needs to happen. It can't be a separate, okay, now we're going to have our DEI lesson. It needs to be within the context. So a lot of this is pre-thinking, and then it's actually baking it in. And obviously I could talk a lot more about how that happens, but I think the important piece here is that it's not separated. It's not, ooh, let's have an SEL program because the kids are online. So now just click over to your SEL program, or let's do a separate thing around communication and critical thinking, you know, for 21st century skills.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny, as I talk to you, and, you know, as I mentioned, we both know we're from Philadelphia. We both went through Philadelphia schools. And I remember, I mean, when we were little kids, okay, with the reading textbooks of Dick and Jane, okay, and they lived in a suburban world where the grass was green. She was always dressed in a little dress with Mary Janes and all that, and he always looked a lot cleaner than I actually was, okay, and you know, and I remember when the teacher taught art, okay, this one was always painful, the old flesh colored crayon. Okay, which just by coincidence happened to match my flesh. Okay, and believe me, there were no African American or anything else, no ethnic groups other than Caucasian kids in my classroom at Lamberton Elementary. All right, and when you look back on that, and we kind of see the harm of that. All right, as you put things together, as you remember that. Okay, well, just give an example, if you can, an anecdotal story, something like that, of how that kind of lesson, whatever they were teaching us then, is now in this brave new world, which I hope continues of more equity in 2021, a zillion years after we were there, almost a zillion anyway.
Yeah, but it just feels like yesterday.
Yes, it does.
Well, you know, you describe, for those who are younger listening in on this, you describe a textbook series at the time that was about as vanilla as you could get. The easiest thing to pick up on in terms of change and how what our students are looking at when they look at content and they look at visuals. And with Pearson, with our classroom, they're often getting all their content right integrated into their lessons. So it's not a separate reader that necessarily is picking up. But they're certainly, you know, at the very easiest level, they're certainly going to see diversity among the students that are, or the kids and the families that are pictured. I say at the simplest level because that's the easiest thing that we can do. The easiest thing we can do is make sure our images are reflecting the diversity of our world today and our student population for that matter. So, you know, and the language and the names of the children. And then you can go start to dig a little deeper because the scenarios that, you know, many years ago would have been a suburban white Dick and Jane and Sally and dog Spot. See, I remember that.
Butterball, remember Butterball the cat or whatever the hell his name was? Or Puff. Puff was the cat. Puff was the cat. Right. Puff and Spot.
I'm going to have to Google that. So at any rate, the scenarios that we put them in are going to look different too. So, you know, as students are learning to read, they're going to be hearing about children doing things that look like today's children. You know, and they're not all going to be dressed the same way, and they're not all going to be doing the same kinds of things. But, you know, I say that that's the easy part of including diversity. When you get to the word equity, then you start to go from simple to way more complex.
Speak on that.
Sure. I had a feeling you might ask me to do that.
Yes,
so,
please do that.
You know, I would love to to see that the place that we've been starting is via social-emotional learning, because, you know, in social-emotional learning, you can actually look at teaching kids skills around not just self-awareness and self-management, but social awareness and building
mm-hmm.
relationships. So
mm-hmm.
you can craft scenarios, as we do, you know, where you have a child that may be of minority ethnicity who could be maybe sitting alone in the lunchroom, which years ago might have been not a diverse child sitting alone in the lunchroom, or not standing outside of an activity that he's feeling or she's feeling or they are feeling, not able to join for a number
mm-hmm.
of reasons, whether it's because it's been exclusive or because there's a financial element or because it's just, it hasn't been made easily accessible to them. You know, so we in a social-emotional lesson, you can be learning about the skill of empathy. You can be learning about the skill of, about the way to think in terms of what is fair. And when you
mm-hmm.
and when you're seeing someone that's not included or worse, possibly picked on, you know, they learn concepts
yeah.
of being a bystander, not a bystander, but an upstander. As you take those concepts, you can take that concept and move it forward in the curriculum for looking at diversity, equity, inclusion from an upstander that we think of with, oh, I'll step in and I'll stop, to being an ally. It's called allyism. And so we can look at how we build that into our coursework
like
and our online or off or
I
in
like
school
that.
Programming where kids will learn to look at becoming an ally for kids that may need one. And
mm-hmm.
that goes deeper. That goes a little bit deeper.
You know, it really does. And
I
just got to say that's so good, because that kind of thing, and again, I have to say when we were growing up and when my kids were growing up, quite frankly, okay, that wasn't spoken about. Okay, it just wasn't, all right? And if there was a kid by themselves, that was a problem for the guidance counselor or somebody. But it wasn't really spoken about well or taught well, all right? And the fact that we finally figured that out, that that's the kind of thing to build up, I like that word, allyism, okay? And say, hey, maybe I can help this other kid, okay? That's a great thing. That's a wonderful thing. Please, I didn't mean to interrupt. I didn't actually mean to interrupt, but I just found that very interesting. Yeah, go ahead.
I like that word too. You know, so
yeah,
what does that look like in the curriculum? Because it goes beyond an SEL lesson, and these are the things that we're working on right now with Pearson as we're looking at the new curriculum. But if you're going to be building allyism into your social
like
studies
that.
Class. Then you might be looking at your community. If you're in the younger grades, you know, they learn about community in social studies. You might be looking at where do folks need help in the community, or where is there a way that you can pull people that are different together to reach a common goal. And so, you know, in the earlier years, that's what allyism might look like, and that's a step beyond just watching to help out kids within your really close environment. And if you're an online student, remember, you're not in the playground.
I was just
going to
ask that. Yeah, go ahead. Finish your sentence. I'm sorry. Then I'll ask. Go ahead.
Yeah, so you're not in the classroom during recess, which means it's important that we set the curriculum up so that students have opportunities to take on projects or to do something with a neighbor or to
exactly.
think about where they can help.
Yeah, and that must be very difficult because everything you're saying, of course, makes perfect sense if the kids are back in school. And assuming we can get together and touch, assuming the pandemic's under control and everything, I hope it stays that way or gets that way, however you want to phrase that, all right? But it's what you're saying is very feasible and helpful and useful, okay? In a real situation, the kids are back in the classroom. But when you're dealing with online, okay, you're dealing with another animal altogether, okay, to teach allyism, to get the kids to work together, all that sort of thing, that must be very difficult to do online. How does that go about? Merle.
I, I think our best approach is to look at a three-pronged way of doing this. So one is we want to integrate it into the lessons themselves. You know, there's a theme. They're studying something, whether it's via a book they're reading for language arts, or whether it is government, or whether it's, you know, social studies. Those two areas tend to be ripe for looking at ways to integrate DEI. But so you've got it sort of set up in the actual content, maybe the readings. And so it's connected to a learning standard, but you sort of take it a little deeper. That's one leg of the stool. Another one is then, what does the teacher do, a virtual teacher do, to support that during synchronous learning time? So, and that's important because you might have some learning coaches that are for younger kids that are great at really helping them with this concept. But in other cases, especially as kids get older, you know, they may not have that support. So they need to be able to talk about it. So they can talk about that online with students, or they can talk about it in a synchronous opportunity. And then I think the third thing, and that's one of the things that sort of sets schools like Connection Academy apart, because it's a fully online virtual school, they operate like schools. So schools can have special programs. They can have after-school clubs, believe it or not. They have online after-school clubs. So there's another way that the school can, you know, take something on, making a difference in the community, preparing something together, implementing, talking to others about it. And so there's three ways to support that. Even though it's online, there's still a lot of interaction.
Right. It's what I have to ask this, which I'd love to ask, okay? And I believe me, I know you are an expert in this, all right? What did you study? How did you become an expert in online education? I'm really serious about that question because your expertise is needed now more than ever. I mean, Pearson has put together Connections Academy, et cetera. But, you know, with so little experience in online over the years for all of education, you're an expert in this. How'd you do that? Talk to me. I love that.
Sure. I can give you my path, and then I can talk to our younger listeners because, you know, they don't have years and years to get there. But I started out in special education and became a school psychologist and started to look closely at what was working in the curriculum and what wasn't for not just kids with special needs, but, you know, I was observing dysfunction in general in how learning was happening. So I was really interested in this. So interested that I then went to a national education nonprofit and got a chance to visit schools all around the country, looking at school culture, social emotional learning, character development, and that taught me a lot. And then I had this I just had to learn more, and there was an opportunity for me to make a leap at the time into higher ed, where they were just beginning to develop online higher ed programs, and I started in education there, went through, you know, helped develop doctor programs, master's programs. And then I was able to take all that knowledge, because that was an evolving field. No one had gone to school at that point deliberately for that. So, but the crossover between being in a brick-and-mortar setting and then beginning to understand how content can be presented well online was a lived experience for me. And then I went and was able to do that in a number of different settings that involved a number of different age ranges. Today's educators have the opportunity to start in brick-and-mortar schools or take courses in learning design, learning experience design, instructional design, along with teaching. And so they cross fields. To get to where I crossed different streams, so to speak, if you think about the Ghostbuster movies.
Yeah.
But younger people today can learn some of these things via graduate work and then just experience. You know, we hire a lot of teachers at Pearson.
I know you do.
And we train them. So, you know, someone who's been in a regular school and wants to jump over to be a virtual teacher, it's not an instant, I've got this. they need training. And so folks like me and others, other really clever people, put that together so that teachers can make that leap.
Right, and what you said is so important, and it refers again back to the pandemic. We asked every teacher suddenly, untrained, they're trained as classroom teachers, but untrained for the most part, to become online educators. Okay, and that made for a heck of a lot of difficulty over the past years. And teachers came to the forefront on that. We all know that. Okay, and did the very best they could. And again, not trained for it. But to actually train teachers to teach online makes all the difference in the world. Thank you for that. And I have good news for you. I didn't know you were a special ed teacher at the beginning of your career. And here's the big news. You ready, Meryl? All special ed teachers go to heaven. Okay. You're on your way. All school librarians also. You'll meet them up there as well. Okay. And
all
as
right.
for the rest of us, you send us a note and tell us what it's like. Okay? But seriously, me anyway. But seriously, they all go to heaven. It's unbelievable. That's a great career. Thank you for that, doing that. I appreciate it. And I want to go over to social-emotional learning, which is so important these days. And you wanted me to ask, and I'm thrilled to be able to ask, because there are advantages and disadvantages to teaching SEL online. Again, you guys know how to do it. So talk about that, the advantages and disadvantages of teaching SEL online, social emotional learning, which, by the way, is in every school district right now, and every kid needs this, okay, for a zillion reasons. So go ahead, advantages and disadvantages, online SEL.
Sure thing. And I have to say, when I first came to Pearson, I was thinking, gosh, SEL online. That's, you know, how do we do this, and how can
exactly.
I do this really, really well? So, you know, one of the things I think that is an advantage is that you do have a lot of kids that are sometimes uncomfortable with the topics that are brought up around SEL in a classroom, in a brick-and-mortar classroom. You know, you've got whatever it is, 16 kids, 25 kids, 30 kids. No, it's SEL lesson time. And they may or may not be ready for it. I think one advantage is they can do it at home with some support if they're younger, and then hopefully follow through on synchronous time. But it gives them a chance to think. If you're reading a scenario or you're looking at a scenario and you have questions, to think about it. You don't have anybody hanging over your shoulder saying, you've got 2 minutes left. No, get an answer down and now talk to somebody. So I think it's really helpful for kids that need more time to really contemplate. I also think in the same vein, there's a number of kids that just won't speak up in class.
That's
it's
right.
It's the strangest thing. They won't raise their hand. They won't speak up. You put them online with a chat on the side, and they're giving you feelings about what they think about something. So, or even an asynchronous discussion, or an opportunity to write about something. They're more ready for these kids to open up online than they are in front of others. So I think that's an advantage. I think another pretty cool advantage, especially for younger kids learning these skills, is that if they have a learning coach involved with it, they're learning together a language and a way to approach self-management, you know, anger, frustration. So there's sort of a side benefit that not only is the student working on this, but the parent or the learning coach actually gets a chance
to see maybe a better way
to handle some of the things that, because for an adult, it's called emotional intelligence. For kids, it's called social emotional learning.
It's
so, and lastly, I would say, you know, we have a bulk of kids that have struggled in brick-and-mortar schools, maybe with an ADHD diagnosis, and self-management is really difficult for them. And it's really hard when teachers just need to move from point A to point B and, you know, child's not ready. So one of the advantages, I think, in learning self-management when you're an online student, and that's a component of SEL, is that it can be sort of structured up for you and some of that pressure and stress taken off. So you can really consistently work on it. So those are all things that I think are advantages that help with looking at, well, what are the disadvantages? And for me, the largest disadvantage, and this is something that we continue to work on, looking at the best way to approach, is that if you're going to learn social skills, you kind of have to use them with somebody to practice.
That's right.
Not your coach or your sibling.
That's right. That's right. I was just thinking about that. Okay, that, you know, you don't want these skills to be taught in a vacuum, because we are all emerging back into the real world. Okay, a world of a society. Okay, like bees in a hive, and we all got to make this work. It's really so fascinating. Okay, and you know, I just want to say, and again, Pearson's Connections Academies. I know, you know, we've done shows before, and I've worked with you guys, and I just know, you know, how well it works and how it's making so many kids feel comfortable, more comfortable they would in the live setting in many, many cases. And it's just, you just keep making it better and better and easier for all these kids to understand there's a new world. I got one last question for you, which, of course, is controversial, okay? There's a phrasing out there called critical race theory. You know this, right? We're talking about DEI and all this, which is, it's a terrible name for this. It just really means let's learn a little bit of our history, okay, and apply it so that we don't make the same mistakes in the future regarding race, okay? There's a better way to say it than that. Has that popped up at all in the online stuff you're doing? Or does that have any meaning at all within this?
That language has popped up in terms of questions that we've gotten from some parents saying, are you teaching it? That is just one particular theory, and it's actually a higher education theory. So that's not included in the K-12 curriculum. It's not included in our K-12 curriculum. What really is critical for us is to look at how we pull off the issues around equity and power in particular, because those things go together when you study history, and inclusivity or voices that were not included. Now, that's the deeper part I didn't talk about earlier around integrating DEI.
Exactly.
And looking at
exactly
how do we look at events. There you go. I mean, we've got to look at events in history, with both our Constitution, we have to look at literature and say, whose voice wasn't here? Without a blame kind of scenario, it's important to still study who was the main population that had the power, and how were others affected by it?
And
when someone did have the power, was it for the good? And how did you know it was for the good? You know, so those concepts are easier to approach as students get older, but integrating that is really what it's about, looking at those issues around equity and diversity in the curriculum, as opposed to today's hot button language that may or may not reflect.
You are dead on right, I got to tell you. And it's, you know, we always misname, we and whoever we are, always misname stuff, and it's named harshly. All right, and what you just said was beautifully said. Okay, that we're going to make a better world out of all this as we keep exploring ways to bring in DEI and equity and social emotional, make these kids work. And now that a lot of it's virtual, and more of it may be if this damn Delta variant doesn't get taken care of. So I hope everybody's okay. Thank you, Merrill. This was a pleasure. I knew it would be.
You're welcome. I very much enjoyed it, and thank you so much for letting me come on the show and for representing Pearson.
You're always welcome here. Okay, my fellow Philadelphian, I'll leave you with these happy words, go Eagles, and we'll leave it at that. I'll use Philadelphia language. Hoagies, steak sandwich, all right? Hoagies, steak sandwich, tasty cakes, and Eagles, and then we're okay, all right? So we're good. We speak the same language.
I've got to get rid of the Philly accent that I've just picked up in this 30-minute conversation.
There you go.
Thank you very much.
So watch Mayor of Easttown if you want the funny Philly accent. Okay? Thank you.
All right.
Bye, Merrill.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye. Dr. Meryl Schwartz, everybody, from Pearson. All right, she's amazing and just a wonderful lady. All right, I'm going to Pearson.com. You all know that. All right, we're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org. Go over there, see what we're doing. My name's Larry Jacobs. Thank you for listening. And it's not January. It's July.